Welcome, everyone, to episode 204 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and today we're going to talk about some of the notable buyouts that happened in the last couple days. Most importantly, Enes Kanter to the Blazers and Markieff Morris to the Thunder. We're also going to give our all-NBA teams at the All-Star break. Going to be plenty of good debate there. And we'll wrap things up with a preview of what we're looking forward to at All-Star weekend. Before we get underway, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. In our bio, you can find our Twitter handles, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today, as always, is my very stable genius of a co-host, Morten Jensen. How's it going, Mort?
It's going great, Brian. I did not declare a state of emergency for my country yesterday.
You know what? I honestly was like so busy at work that I didn't even know this was happening. And then like I made Valentine's Day dinner, and like after that I finally like sat down and was like, "Oh, okay. This is a thing that is happening." Great. I felt like Pert Hapley from Parks and Rec.
We got breaking news alerts on all our phones. My younger brother was over visiting, and then like my wife, myself, and him, we all like had on our cells, like going off. Oh, okay, yeah. America is going down the drain. That's fine.
It's okay. When we have a climate change national emergency in 2021, I want everyone to remember yesterday as the reason why. It's gonna be great. So Mort, we talked some buyouts last episode, notably like Jeremy Lin, Wayne Ellington. There are a couple more that happened in the last few days that I think are worth discussing, and then we'll get into kind of the impact, the overall impact. Like we talked last episode about the state of the Eastern Conference. You know, now is the perfect time to like survey the whole league because it's the All-Star break. We have a week off. So the first one was Enes Kanter to the Portland Trail Blazers.
Yeah.
How much do you think he's going to help there?
No, I mean, I think he will because despite his faults, like he's not a great defender. We know that, but he's right. A great rebounder. He's a great scorer, and he does it on volume. So you can actually sit Jusuf Nurkić down and somewhat replicate his production over the course of 48 minutes. That's going to be huge because having this ability of having a big man near the basket who can score, I get that that's old school basketball. But when you have Dame and CJ running around on the perimeter, like that opens things up. So the fact that they have a continuously, you know, persistent post presence that they can dump the ball into and who can make, you know, kick out passes, I think that overall helps them a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, like, look, we know the concerns with Kanter are not offense, it's just defense. And
right.
If he's not playing 30-plus minutes a game, I think it's less of a concern. I mean, will he get run off the floor by certain teams? Of course he will. Like, the Warriors in particular will be a very challenging matchup for him. But as you said, you know, when the Warriors are playing a guy like Boogie Cousins, they're going to need a bigger body to bang for 48 minutes or however long Boogie plays. And Nurkić, you know, Nurkić is having a great season, but he's only playing 27 minutes. So you'd otherwise be relying on Zach Collins, who I like a lot as a long-term prospect. But like, if you think you're a potential Western Conference Finals team this season, I don't know if you feel great about going into the playoffs with Zach Collins and Myers Leonard as your top two bigs in reserve. So
right.
Having a, like, I mean, Kanter's played, I think, 27 playoff games at this point. He's, you know, he's playoff tested. He's got experience. He's, as you said, he will, you know, he has the potential to give you a double-double off the bench. It's like a no-harm move. That's kind of where all of these buyouts are, right? Like, it's just, what's the harm in bringing these guys in? As long as they're, I think Kanter, I mean, he was frustrated in New York the whole season because he wasn't playing. They were playing the younger guys over him. But he was playing on a terrible team. I think he'll just be happy to play meaningful basketball for the first time this season.
Right. And, like, he's not going to get what he wants. Like, he's not going to get 30 minutes
right
off the bat. Like, he may get 20. Like you just said, like Jusuf Nurkić is averaging 27. Mm-hmm. I don't think you should really play anyone outside of Kanter as the backup five, rather, because Zach Collins in my eyes, should play the four.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he can stretch, he can get minutes there. He's somewhat agile.
Yeah.
Not saying that he can't play center at all. But, you know, in fact, move down the line, it might actually be his preferred position. Mm-hmm. But right now, I would have no qualms whatsoever just playing him at strictly at the four.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And, I mean, look, the Blazers are already toward the top of the league. They're sixth in rebounds per game, eighth in offensive rebounds per game. So adding a guy like Cantor, you're only bolstering that strength. And, like, that is one strategy we've seen be effective against the Warriors. It's just, like, you know, they're going to outshoot you most nights. But if you can outsize them, limit them to one shot attempt per trip down the floor, that at least gives you a puncher's chance against them. So
this is true. Yeah. Rebound. Do you feel similar as me that rebounding has been somewhat an overseen or forgotten aspect? It seems like everyone is talking about, like, defensive movement, 3-point shooting, all that, which, like, it's all fine and dandy, mm-hmm. but having a truly dominant rebounder, especially defensive rebounder, I think has a lot of value. And I wouldn't be surprised if the league has maybe underestimated the impact of a strong defensive rebounder.
For sure, because, like, those trips down the floor where you play good defense for 24 seconds, limit them to a bad shot attempt, and then they pull down an offensive rebound, that's just demoralizing.
And if, yeah, that's killer.
Yeah, so, like, absolutely. I think being able to limit a team to one shot every trip is huge, and Cantor, in theory, will help Portland improve upon that strength even more than they already are. They're already good at it, but...
Yeah,
you know, they're only going to get better. They're second in the league in rebound percentage right now, and they just added Enes Kanter, who is, like, the best option they possibly could have added on the buyout market in that regard.
Oh yeah, like, let's not really ignore Kanter's rebounding. It's elite. I think it's fair to say that it's elite, and that's part of why I never really got why he was so underrated. I get the defensive angle, and I get that he's not, like, a 3-point shooter. But, like, he's supremely talented. And I think overall, this, from Portland's side, was just a talent acquisition. Like, this was a talent signing. Yeah. At the end of the day, if he goes up against, you know, opponent bench unit, I have no question about his ability going up against bench units. Right. I think he'll do it terrifically. I get the whole fit angle, and I get the whole, hey, you need to be, you know, a part of this new age NBA. I get all that. But at the end of the day, if you have a supremely gifted athlete, like, run him out. See what he can do.
Right. Right. And they signed him to that. They were the team to sign him to that offer sheet a few years ago that OKC matched. But, like, they've wanted this guy for a while.
Yep. Yeah. So there's, like, a connection.
Right, and it works out better because now they're not paying him $18 million. They're paying him, you know, whatever. I assume it's just for the minimum. So, like, now they're getting that production super cheap. It's a great move. It's a no-risk move for Portland. And then OKC agreed to turn with Markieff Morris on Wednesday as well, who we talked about last episode with our tinfoil hats on. We can remove the tinfoil hats for the time being, but how do you think Morris fits in OKC?
Depending on health, which is huge in this particular example, he would on paper fit very, very well. I mean, he's an inside-outside threat. He's a hard-nosed player. He gives them that edge. And I think also, you know, having him be a type of in-your-face player will complement Russ a lot. Yeah. Russ seems to be that one person who's just no BS allowed, right?
Right.
And now you have another one. You can argue Steven Adams is the same way, but you just have this really hard-nosed, tough-nosed front line now where nobody takes any BS. Like, they're all business, and I have a feeling that just going into the paint against those guys, I mean, you have to consider it at this point. I mean, Markieff Morris, Steven Adams, Nerlens Noel, Jeremy Grant, even Paul George, who can swing up and play the big positions, like, that's a serious, that's a nasty front line, rather.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so I think basically he's going to be what they were hoping to get out of Patrick Patterson.
Right.
Like, Patterson's just been bad for most of the year. I mean, he's shooting less than 38% overall, 33.8 from three. Markieff is a career 33.8% shooter from three, but he can score much more easily than Patrick Patterson. Yeah. So I think he's going to give that bench unit a nice lift. I mean, anyone who thinks he's going to replace Jeremy Grant in the starting lineup has not been watching Jeremy Grant play basketball this season. That is
that a thing?
I
have not seen that.
Yeah, apparently. That, I don't know.
That's very optimistic. Let me just put it that way.
That's not going to happen because Jeremy Grant has been playing very well and he's a great fit in that starting lineup. But much like Cantor is going to give Portland's bench a nice lift, Morris will give OKC's bench a nice lift. Yep. Again, it's like a no downside move, as you said, assuming health, which he's reportedly been cleared. That's all we can really go off of until we see him. But yeah, I mean, what's the harm here, right? You know, like you've got Dennis Schroeder is your primary scorer off the bench, but aside from that, like Terrence Ferguson has been playing pretty well this year, but
yeah,
you know, he is your sixth leading scorer at 6.8 points a game. Like Markieff gives you another legit scoring threat in that second unit. It's going to help them potentially with staggering. So you've got, you know, when you have George and Westbrook off the floor, it's really like Schroeder is the one guy who you can count on to get a basket. Now you've got Markieff in there too. I think that will help. It'll help Schroeder if nothing else.
Yeah, I agree. Just having the ability to have two bench guys, one who like leads the guard unit and one who like leads the bigs,
mm-hmm.
that's just going to offer some, not chemistry, but symmetry. That was the word I was looking for.
Yes.
So do we have any word on, you know, what happened with Alex Abrines, by the way? Because that seems like a very unfortunate situation. Like, he gave back almost the entirety of his contract.
Yeah. All that has been released publicly is that he was dealing with a personal issue.
Oh, no.
I don't want to speculate. I just hope whatever it is,
Of course.
Like, fingers crossed that everything's okay and he can eventually make it back in the league. But, like, yeah, that's a fair point. That was a... You know, they've been relying on, like, Deontay Burton, who's on a two-way contract, has been playing somewhat significant minutes as of late. So, like, they really did need someone else on that bench to give them, you know, Nerlens has played great this year. Schroeder's been playing well. Ferguson's been playing well. But, like, aside from that, they really didn't have much. Their depth was very limited. So I think Markieff is going to help really round out that rotation nicely.
Mm. Yep, I agree.
So that brings me into, like, the state of the league at the All-Star break. Because, again, we talked last episode about, like, how the East stacks up. It aged immediately poorly because the Celtics went out and embarrassed the Sixers without Kyrie on Tuesday night, which I pretty much predicted. And I predicted both the outcome and the immediate overreaction / meltdown from Sixers Twitter. It was really a fun night Tuesday. But... You know, now we've got the four teams in the East. You've got now Portland and OKC adding some bench depth. Do you think any of these teams, whether in the East or the West, and we can include Denver too, even though, you know, they didn't make any moves, but Isaiah Thomas just made his season debut Wednesday, which is an addition in and of itself. Do you think the Warriors at the All-Star break are looking at any team in the NBA? They're like, uh-oh. Our dynasty is in trouble, or are they just like, screw, you know, we lost to Portland, but who cares? Like, we're playing so well. Boogie's been better than expected. We are going to destroy the playoffs. Like, you don't even have to tune in from mid-April on, because I can tell you how this is going to end.
Well, I think one thing is how they feel. I don't think they feel, you know, fear at whatsoever because of that roster.
Yeah.
The other part of the equation is, should they feel fear? I think they should be kind of nervous about Denver specifically because they're just so unpredictable offensively in terms of their ball movement. Like, you cannot defend Denver. When you come into Denver and you have a game plan, like, Nikola Jokic can ruin that, like, through the first quarter. Completely just annihilate whatever you kind of predict will happen, because his passing pattern is so random yet so effective. And they just move so freely. And that's the kind of team you really have to worry about, especially in the playoff context. Because even, like I just said, like, regardless of the data you compile, like, you cannot count on it, because those guys just do whatever the hell they feel like, and it's working. So I would be very nervous about Denver specifically. But, you know, for the Warriors, I also understand why they may not feel that way. I mean, look at him. Two of the rings in a row. They have probably the most talented starting five of all time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably fair to say, right?
I think so. I can't think of one that jumps out as better than, like, you have five legitimate all-stars in your starting lineup.
Right, and it's because they're all basically in their prime, you know, Draymond Green's struggles notwithstanding.
Right.
But, I mean, I just can't... The most talented lineup I can think of, you know, two guys were outside their prime. That was the Lakers back in, you know, 2003, 2004.
Yeah. Yeah.
When Gary Payton and Karl Malone joined the roster.
Mm-hmm.
But that was about it. And they didn't really have a three. Right. So, yeah. That's the closest thing I can come. But, yeah, so it makes sense to me why they're not scared.
Yeah.
But looking from it from afar, Denver, maybe Toronto and Milwaukee, you know, I just don't know yet. Like, we are mostly comparing Eastern Conference teams to other Eastern Conference teams because they play each other a lot more.
Right.
And obviously they just own Eastern Conference team because most of them are really, really bad.
Yeah.
So it's hard to gauge, mm-hmm. but I do think they won't go winless. They won't sweep, you know, Milwaukee or Toronto specifically.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, look, they've won, I think, 16 of their past 18. Their only two losses were at home against Philly and on the road against Portland since Boogie debuted. Like, they have been laying waste to teams. I mean, I agree, Denver's probably their biggest threat in the West, and they pounded the Nuggets by 31 points in Denver on January 15th. Like, you know, I think if anyone's betting right now, you're still betting on the Warriors. I would take the Warriors over the field at this point to win the NBA title because there's just no reason to think, you know, assuming they're all healthy, like, as you said, they have the most talented starting five probably in NBA history. Like, there's no reason to think any team can take four games out of seven against this team. But I'm with you. I don't think they go faux. I don't think they sweep the playoffs.
Yeah, no.
I could see them sweeping the West. It wouldn't totally shock me. I do think, like, it's hard to say. Like, I really do think most, if not all, of their biggest threats are in the East. Like, with all due respect to the Thunder and the Blazers and the Nuggets, like, maybe they can take one game off of them. But I don't know. I feel like they're going to make it to the finals relatively unscathed.
Mm.
Milwaukee is the one team that I could see giving them some trouble just because, you know, Giannis is, like, so effing incredible.
Right.
And because I think they just shoot such a high volume of threes this year that, like, you know, we can talk about the Nets in another episode, but I think that's the type of variance you want to avoid in the playoffs. Like, if I'm an Eastern Conference team, I would rather draw Indiana in the first round than I would the Nets because the Nets just shoot such a higher volume of threes than Indiana that if any of those guys get hot for a night, like, you know, Chris Middleton maybe hits six threes in a night for the Bucks, and, like, that could swing a game against the Warriors. So that is one possibility. Also, like, the Warriors do have the personnel with Durant, with Draymond, with Iggy, I think, to really give Giannis problems. And that's my big concern for Milwaukee in the playoffs is, yes, they have a lot of talent, but if Giannis isn't, like, a superstar on a given night, if a team figures out how to slow him down, I think they're Milwaukee of the four top contenders. Like, they're the one team where if you cut the head off the snake, the rest of it dies immediately. Whereas, like, if Kyle Lowry has a bad night or if Kyrie has a bad night or Ben Simmons has a bad night, those other three teams can pick it up because they have enough talent elsewhere that can, like, create for themselves.
I think that's fair. I get that some Bucks fans will not appreciate the fact that there's truth in the fact that Giannis is the head of the snake in that sense, because a lot of them are talking about, you know, the depth of the team, which mm-hmm. isn't wrong, but there's just such a big gap from Giannis, even to Middleton, who we love,
right.
Right. I mean, I think that's fair
forever.
Yeah, but I mean, let's not go nuts. Obviously, the talent disparity between Middleton and Giannis is substantial. It's not like KD and Steph, who are somewhat equal in terms of their level and production and influence. So I think that's very much fair. But how much do you think are we going to talk about Boogie versus Brook Lopez if we see that finals matchup? Because like Brook Lopez is going to draw out Boogie far more than Boogie's going to draw out, you know, Lopez, I think.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, that's, if I'm Milwaukee, that's also the concern. Do I have the bigs to match up against a Boogie or a Marc Gasol, even if they face the Raptors, or a Joel Embiid? Like, that will be a weakness that I would expect the other teams to exploit. But at the same time, you can't be goaded into trying to stretch him out, I think. Because, like, I think if you have a big physical big like that, you don't want that guy to shoot threes all the time. Like, Brook Lopez has become a high-volume, good three-point shooter, but, like, Joel Embiid should not be goaded into taking eight threes against Brook Lopez.
Or, like, agreed.
Same with Marc Gasol. Like, you should use your size advantage against him and bully him down in the post.
You know what's fun about that? Brook Lopez actually has, or at least used to, have a very, very solid post game. Like, he was a legitimate post wizard for a while. Like, I don't think that's gone anywhere. I just don't think it's utilized.
Right.
So in a playoff setting, it wouldn't surprise me whatsoever just to throw teams off, that they kind of give him more volume and ask him to be more inside-outside. I would greatly appreciate just that little wrinkle from Budenholzer.
Oh, I could definitely see that. And to your point about, you know, I agree that Bucks fans probably will not take kindly. It seems like Bucks fans are quickly becoming the Utah of the East, and that they're getting very defensive anytime anyone suggests, like, Giannis isn't the runaway MVP. So that MVP discussions are going to be very annoying in the next couple weeks, just based on any reaction I've seen from Bucks fans when people are like, oh, James Harden should be in the MVP race. And they're like, no, Giannis is the clear favorite. How dare you? But
I mean, I think they're right, but they could just go about it better.
Right. Much like Utah fans with Donovan Mitchell last year. It's great. But to your point, like, Giannis, when he's off the court, they only have a net rating of plus 3.0, which is good, but it's not, like, championship worthy. When he's on the court, it's 13.7. So if Giannis, again, for whatever reason, if he has a bad night, just like he, not even because a team slows him down, if he just has a bad night, or again, if a Warriors team, for instance, throws KD, Draymond, and Iggy on him and slows him down, it will be tough for a Milwaukee team to win a whole series against the Warriors, much less, like, they might be able to steal one or two games, but.
Right.
I mean, that all goes back to the overall, like, overarching point of the Warriors right now. I think they can have a healthy respect of Milwaukee, Toronto, Denver, whoever. I don't think they have anything to fear. I think the only thing they have to fear is what Kevin Durant does on July 1st.
So remember when, you know, last year, when it was Cleveland in the finals, and we talked about, like, how should Golden State go about this? And, you know, we pretty much reached the conclusion very quickly that because of the lack of supporting cast in Cleveland, like, you should just double LeBron. You should just do, like, you should really stop LeBron. You had the reverse game plan. Just let LeBron do whatever he, you know, he wants to do, and then stop everyone else. But because they only had, like, Kevin Love and stuff last year.
J.R. Smith,
like, you just cut the head off the snake instead. I think that's the big concern if you're Milwaukee, right? Like, that if you succeed in, you know, basically stopping Giannis, and you're forcing Chris Middleton and Brook Lopez and Nikola Mirotic to beat you.
Yeah.
Like, if I'm Golden State, I'm taking those odds.
Yeah, absolutely. Because, like, whereas, do you trust Eric Bledsoe to lead?
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't trust him to make plays consistently, right. At least not make the high IQ play. And that's not like hard against going. You know, that's not like a critique necessarily of Bledsoe. It's just
right.
He has this single-mindedness at times where he just sees the rim. And I can appreciate when he goes aggressive and just wants to attack it and dunk everything and score on guys, because that does have value, especially in the playoffs. But I don't think he can sustain a positive output over a 7-game series. I wouldn't trust him with that role. Whereas if you're Toronto, like, yeah, if you can shut down Kawhi, then the ball goes into the hands of Marc Gasol, who can make passes,
right.
And who can make decisions,
right.
And who can make the right call and the right play, whatever. Like, there is a significant upside still when the ball swings to Gasol.
Yeah.
So that's probably where Milwaukee will come up short. I still feel they are one playmaker away from really being in that conversation. Having said that, I still wouldn't be surprised whatsoever if they came out of the East.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't either. We'll have plenty of East conversation as we get close to the playoffs, because as we've already hinted at, second round, I mean, if Milwaukee, Toronto, Boston, and Philly all advance, the second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs are probably going to be the highlight of the playoffs.
For sure.
Yeah. All right, Mort, we promised last episode that we were going to get into some all-NBA discussion, because as we mentioned, as of now, it looks like one of LeBron James or Kawhi Leonard will not even make it to the second team All-NBA, which is wild to think about. So we have assembled, as of now, what our All-NBA teams would look like. Now, you have to keep in mind, these are subject to change. Someone could get hurt in the last 30 games or 25 games, however much the season is left. So, like, don't hold us to these when we have our end of the season podcast to give updated All-NBA teams. These will change. But I think the first team guards are probably the easiest part of this whole discussion. It's Stephen Harden. I don't think there's any argument there, right?
Agreed.
Okay.
Giannis. I actually agree with your entire first team.
Really? Honestly. Oh, good. Yeah. Okay. Because I think my center pick will piss off Nuggets fans. Spoiler alert.
No, I mean, okay, so you have Steph, Harden, Paul George, Giannis, and Joel Embiid.
Yeah.
Look, I could see Jokic there. It's not like I would lose any sleep if Jokic is named, you know, center for first team.
Right.
It's fine. But I do think Embiid has just been better. He plays a two-way game. Jokic has, like, he's gotten better defensively, but he's not, like, a defensive player of the year candidate whatsoever.
Right.
And you just got to take that into account. Like, Embiid, I don't have the numbers in front of me because my computer is really acting up, so you may have to read the numbers for Embiid for me.
Yes.
But if I'm not mistaken, he's at, like, what, 26, 27 points a game?
27.3 points, 13.5 rebounds, 3.5 assists, almost two blocks, 1.9 blocks.
Right, and his defensive influence is obviously just terrific.
Yeah.
The only thing that really bothers me with Embiid, and we've talked about this before, is the lack of efficiency. Like, he's still not there where I want him to be.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he just gets goaded into these dumb... Like, that's what he did against the Celtics the other night. For whatever reason, they are the one team that could just goad him into taking a bunch of threes he shouldn't take. And he did it. He took 8, I believe, the other night, which was dumb. Let's do center first, then we can come back to forwards. It was between, with all due respect to Rudy Gobert, it was between Jokic and Embiid for me.
Mm-hmm.
And your point about Embiid being a two-way player is where it ultimately... That was the tiebreaker, because I think you could argue, really, you could argue either way, like, who's having the more impressive offensive season. I mean, Embiid is scoring more. He's, like, I think he's one of only, if he maintained this, the 27, 13, and 3, he would be one of only 7 players in NBA history to ever put up those averages in a season. The last guy to do it was Shaq.
Okay.
And before that, it was Kareem. So, like, this is very exclusive company. Like, Kareem did it 7 times. Wilt Chamberlain did it 5 times. Bob Pettit did it 5 times. Elgin Baylor 4. And then Embiid, George Mikan, and Shaq once. So, That's incredible. But then you look at Jokic. No 7-footer has ever averaged as many assists. Jokic has averaged 20.4 points, 10.6 rebounds, 7.7 assists. He's the best passing true big man. Like, I'm not counting LeBron yeah. and Magic in this. Like, true 7-foot big man. Best passing big man in NBA history. It's so, like, that ship has sailed. It's
that's just ridiculous when he's, like, 23
yeah, years old. Yeah, I know. But, like, it's, I mean, it's incredible. So, like, what both of those guys are doing offensively puts them in unique historical company, which I think is probably the first threshold you're looking for in an all NBA first team debate, especially like in a year where multiple guys are playing this well. So then I turn to defense and I see Sarah Chalea is going to make fun of me for this because I'm going to cite on off numbers again. But like, I think this is valid, right? So Embiid has the highest of any rotation player because I'm not counting Mike Scott yet, too small of a sample size. He has the highest differential net rating of any Sixer. They are 12.5 points per 100 possessions better with him. Or they outscore opponents by 8.2 points with him on the court per 100 possessions. They get outscored by 4.3 with him off the court. So that's a 12.5 point difference. Jokic, 7.3 points per 100 possessions better with him on the court. But they're actually still, they outscore opponents by 1.7 with him off the court. So it's only a 5.6 point difference. That's below Paul Millsap, below Gary Harris. They are 3 points better defensively with him off the court than they are on. So, like, again, we are splitting hairs here. These are razor thin margins, but
yeah, and plus minus is still team oriented, right, which is why I still think it's such a flawed stat. Not that it doesn't have its use, but I mean, you need to take it with a grain of salt.
For sure. But, like, I think the point I'm going for here is that Embiid is the focal point of the Sixers on both ends of the court. Like,
right,
they are, I mean, they just would not, like, with him off the court, they have a defensive rating of 109.2, which would rank, it'd be tied, ironically, with Golden State at 15 overall. With him on the floor, it's 102.5, which would lead the league.
Yeah. No, I mean, there's no question about his defensive prowess. Yeah. Absolutely. And that's why I pick him. I still think Jokic, from an offensive standpoint, has the better season.
Yeah, I agree.
But I don't feel as though that his defensive influence, or I should say the difference in defensive influence, makes up for it.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, that's a good way of putting it. Like, Joel Embiid is more impactful defensively than, or has a greater advantage defensively over Jokic than Jokic does offensively over Embiid.
That's exactly how I would put it if I was a native speaker. Yes.
It even tripped me up for a second. Yeah. Okay. So, well, that's a spoiler. So Jokic, I'm assuming, will be your second team. All NBA.
That's correct.
Yeah. Okay. So let's go to the forwards then, because look, they're a really, I mean, at least depending on how you classify Anthony Davis, like, is he a forward or is he a center? I'm going to put him as a forward, or at least I did, just to kind of cheat. Because, like, if you put him as a center, that means one of Davis, Gobert, Embiid, or Jokic is not on the all-NBA team, which is wild. Now, Davis might slip off because who knows what his minutes are going to look like over these last 20 or so games. Like, right, he suffered a shoulder injury last night. It's reportedly not serious, but I wouldn't be surprised if the Pelicans milk that for all it's worth, because therein lies the risk of playing Anthony Davis or being forced to play Anthony Davis, as he gets hurt a lot. And even if it's a minor injury, like, that was his trade value flashing before his eyes as he left the game and left the arena last night before the game was even over. So Giannis, I think, you know, clear first team all NBA forward.
Obviously. Right. Yeah.
Depending on how your MVP ballot is, he's either one or two. So he's got to be a first teamer. I think the other spot comes down to Paul George or Kevin Durant. And it's
Yeah. I was about to say Kawhi, but he's missed too much.
Yeah, right. That's where it, and like LeBron too. If LeBron had played the full season, he'd be a first teamer. But he's missed,
Well, I mean, if we assume Kawhi had played enough.
That's, I mean, LeBron has been all NBA first team for 11 years straight. I think he would just all get, right. Much like a Klay Thompson just got an All-Star nod, like a...
Yeah, but does that make it right, though?
No, but I would guess if LeBron... Because, like, if he had played the whole season, the Lakers would not be this terrible. They'd be in the playoffs. They'd be on the right side of the playoff bracket.
I agree.
So I think that would help his case.
But at what point are we going to acknowledge that he's more or less not played defense for 6 years?
clearly never, because he's still averaging. Like, he's putting up LeBron James-esque numbers. It's almost 27 points, 8.5 rebounds, 7.5 assists, more than 2 threes a game. Like, I don't know. Maybe he wouldn't be guaranteed to be first team because so many other forwards are having incredible seasons, but
right,
he'd at least be in that conversation.
Well, of course he'll be in. Look, it's LeBron James. I just think that he's so much better in the postseason than he is in the regular season. I think he just kind of just took a back seat and has done so for a while when it comes to the regular season. Like, he's not trying defensively. He's coasting a lot, and I think there are players out there who are putting in, just greater effort and are significantly better defensively during the regular season. And after all NBA and, the individual awards, they do originate from the regular season. So we need to be fair.
Right.
And that's why, still, LeBron obviously should still have a role on the all NBA teams because, like you just alluded to, he's still scoring, he's still rebounding, he's still playmaking. Like, obviously, he shouldn't be not put on the list.
Right.
But defense is just, like, you got to consider it. The reason that we have, and you're going to come to Paul George in a moment, the reason that both of us have Paul George on the first team is because he's the leading candidate for Defensive Player of the Year.
Yeah.
As well as scoring 28, 29 a game.
Right. Yeah, it came down for me first team, Durant, Paul George. And, like, Durant is lost in the hysteria over where he's going this summer, and him throwing, like, a monthly hissy fit at the media. Durant's having a monster season, right?
Absolutely.
Like, he's averaging 27.6 points, 7 rebounds, almost 6 assists a game. His three-point shooting percentage has fallen compared to last year. But if he knocks down a slightly higher percentage of threes, he could be right back in the 50-40-90 club. Like, he isn't that far off.
Right. And his per-minute numbers are insane.
Yeah. So, like, it physically pains me to leave him off of the first team. But then you look at Paul George, as you said. He's got to be at least, if he's not the front runner for Defensive Player of the Year, he's, like, right up there with Rudy Gobert. He's leading the league with 2.3 steals a game. He's also hitting a career-high 28.7 points, 8 rebounds, 4.1 assists. He's shooting, I think this is the most absurd part of what he's doing. He's taking 9.6 three-pointers a game, and he's hitting them at a career-best 40.6%.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because that was actually the argument that I would be using as well for Paul George.
Yeah.
Like, that is just such a ridiculous number.
Yeah.
Like, what he's doing from the three-point line this year is... Like, Stephen Curry has just messed us all up.
Right.
Like, imagine Steph Curry not existing.
Right.
And then having Paul George put up these numbers. Like, he would be lauded in the national media for what he's doing. Like, whoa, this is insane.
Yeah.
But because Stephen Curry does exist, and I'm very grateful for that, by the way.
Right.
This is like, oh, ho-hum, he's having a fine season from downtown. No, he's having an absolute elite monster season from downtown. And that's what separated it for me with Durant, actually, because I think that's just so impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, to your point, Curry is shooting. He's taking 11.5 threes a game, and he's hitting 44.4% of them, because of course he is.
Of course. And how many are we up to with Harden now? He took 22 the other night.
Oh, man. Yeah. But I think he's been less efficient. Oh, he's definitely been less efficient than Curry.
Yeah, I'm asking about the shot attempts, because
13.6 threes this game.
Oh, you know what? We touched on this on the previous episode, but that means he's still online to take more than 1,000 threes in the season.
Good lord. Yeah. He's at 733 already.
Yep, and it's the All-Star break today.
Yeah, that's outrageous. But to your point, like, you know, so Curry is breaking our minds, as I agree with that. But Paul George is outshooting Klay Thompson from three. Like, yeah, Klay's taking 7.5 attempts per game. He's shooting 39.6%.
Klay's been off for most of the year. That's partly why.
Yeah. But, like, you know, we associate, like, oh, the Splash Brother, whatever. You know, like, Paul George has become a Splash Brother this season, effectively.
Yes. Yes.
Like,
absolutely.
So, I just looked it up. Stephen Curry is the only player in NBA history, and he's done this four times, including this season, to take at least 9 threes a game and hit at least 40% of them. So Paul George would be only the second player, if he can keep this up, he'd be only the second player in NBA history to take at least 9 threes a game and hit 40%.
I'm calling it out. A sign and trade with KD for Paul George. Get all the Splash Brothers together. Like, stick with DeMarcus Cousins, who started draining threes as well.
Oh my god.
Go with it. And then find a new four who can also shoot at a high level.
Yeah. Oh, great. And let's reunite KD and Westbrook, because that went so well the first time.
Well, as we talked about last time, Westbrook has grown, apparently.
Right. That's true. Okay. So let's go to our second team, All-NBA. I think, again, the guards are pretty uncontroversial here. I had Dame and Kyrie.
Yeah. Yep.
And then since Durant barely missed out on first team, he's... second team forward. We said earlier Jokic is the second team center. Mm-hmm. So now I think the second team other forward spot, that's where it gets tricky. Because you still have Anthony Davis out there, you still have LeBron, and you still have Kawhi.
Yeah, but we agreed at one point to actually just make a room for Anthony Davis in some capacity. Like, it's not going to be on the second team.
Yeah.
But because we could use him both as a center or a forward.
Right.
But Jokic exists, and Kawhi exists. So we have to push Davis down to the third team. And you know what? Actually, I'm good with that because of the trade request.
Yep.
Like, if Jimmy Butler is being, you know, kind of punished for not making the All-Star game, which is fair.
Right.
Because he was an a-hole.
Yeah.
Like, it's completely fair that AD drops down a spot or, you know, whatever.
Right.
It's fine. Yeah. I'm okay with that. And I get that it's entirely logical. It's entirely emotional. I don't care. That's fine.
Yeah. Well, also, like, we're choosing this if the season ended today, but you do have to project out. And again, he hurt his shoulder last night. Like, I would assume by the time the season is over, like, right now, AD has actually played two more games than Kawhi, and he's played more minutes per game, and his per-game stats blow Kawhi's out of the water.
Yeah.
That said, I'm going to guess Kawhi ends the season with more minutes, more games played, which will help even the playing field against Anthony Davis.
And that's why I have Kawhi in there, because here's the thing. You know, the Pelicans are looking at this injury going, oh, NBA, look, listen, this is a horrible injury. We need to keep him out for the rest of the year. Look, he can barely move his arm. It's horrible.
Right. They should.
I'm fine. No, you're not, Anthony. No, you're certainly not fine. Oh, sweet baby, let's take care of you and make sure that you are not playing any more games for the rest of the year.
Your arm is dangling by a thread. You can't even eat cereal, much less play in the NBA.
Can't even look at it, so bad.
Yeah. That's what they should do. Like,
yes.
This will be the worst muscle contusion of all time, but it should sideline him for two more months. Like,
oh, for sure. Like we've had several world-renowned doctors in to look at it, they all agree. It's, yep.
He has thoracic outlet syndrome too, actually.
Oh, no. Don't put that jinx on him.
Too soon? Too soon?
That is definitely too soon.
Good. Okay. I'm definitely not bitter because... He who shall not be named threw Brett Brown under the bus yesterday at his introductory press conference. No shade being returned in that regard.
I'm not even aware, so I'm sure you'll tell me off the air.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm with you. I think Kawhi, and this is where it's like, it's tricky because statistically of the three, Kawhi is having the worst season. Of Davis, LeBron, and Kawhi, he's having the worst season. He's played only four more games than LeBron, but like, how much do you factor team success in? Because like, the Pelicans,
substantially when it's all NBA.
Yeah,
right?
So like the Pelicans and the Lakers are currently out of the playoffs. The Raptors are currently the second best team in the East, and I believe they have the third best record in basketball.
Right. And defense matters.
Defense definitely matters.
Yeah, I mean, Kawhi has never been like one of those big stat heads.
Yeah.
Like, he's never been that guy. And I think, you know, a lot of the NBA community has kind of ignored him in part because of that. Like, they expected him to suddenly become this 7-assist type player, because that's just where the wind is blowing with most forwards these days. It's just like, oh, everyone seems to be averaging a lot of assists. Hey, Draymond out of nowhere, 7 assists.
Right.
You know, Ben Simmons coming in averaging, what, 7-8 assists.
Yeah.
LeBron, obviously, with his, you know, typical 27-7-7. And then Nikola Jokic from the center spot is averaging almost 8 assists.
Right.
So I think people are penalizing Kawhi for not becoming that player. Like, yeah. Hey, Kawhi, you're lacking in the playmaking department. Like, he's fine. He's absolutely fine in that department. He's not racking up major assists because he's the end target. Like, he's the scorer. He's the guy you actually look for. He's the guy who moves a lot without the ball as well, spotting up and doing all these things. And he's exerting a lot of energy defensively because he's such an influential defender and a disruptive defender. Like, let's be honest, outside of Paul George, like from a perimeter standpoint, is there anyone better than Kawhi at just when you dribble the ball up the court and Kawhi is guarding you? Aren't you as a playmaker or a ball handler looking for the first opportunity to get rid of that basketball?
Yeah, because he's just going to reach those gigantic hands in there and swipe it away otherwise.
Exactly. Like, the threat of Kawhi in itself. Like, I remember this from when he played in San Antonio. I admittedly haven't looked through the tape from his Toronto days here, but I'm fairly certain it's still valid. You had teams scheming their offense just to pass the ball away from where Kawhi was. Right. And like, if he was in the vicinity of where the basketball was, all right, let's swing it so he doesn't have a chance of swiping it. Like, that's ridiculous. That's just... I don't remember who it was who said this. It could have been Zach Lowe, but don't like quote me on that because I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
But someone of significance at one point pointed out that Kawhi may actually be a top 5 or even top 3 best perimeter defender of all time.
Oh,
and
wow.
He at that point in time, he wasn't even like I don't know. He's from 1991, so he'll be 28 this year.
Mm-hmm.
But like at that point in time, he was like barely in his prime.
Yeah.
Well, like, he is so disruptive.
Remember, Matt Moore had that column a couple years ago where, like, the Spurs' defensive rating was actually, I think it was better with Kawhi off the court. And he was like, this doesn't make any sense. But right. Then, yeah, as you said, it was like teams would basically park someone in the corner and make Kawhi guard them because they didn't want any part of Kawhi, like, roaming. They were terrified of him. They were like, let's just get him out of the play and literally isolate our actions to the other half of the court. Like, we don't want Kawhi involved at all. That's how scared we are of him. Because,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's still the... I believe it was Ben McLemore, like, the infamous clip where, like, Kawhi just stole his lunch.
The double
like,
swap?
Yeah, like, oh, I'm shocked that kid's still in the league. Like, I would have retired right then and there.
Hey, that was demoralizing.
Oh,
but
man.
And that's what I'm talking about, because in Toronto... you know, while I haven't seen what I said before that happened in San Antonio where teams would just, you know, play around him.
Right.
What I'm still seeing is the old Kawhi in terms of, like, the disruptive defense, both on the perimeter he can rotate in and guard the post.
Yeah.
Like, he can switch on to very small guards and stick with him. Like, he's... You can throw Kawhi into virtually every possible defensive scenario and he would hold his own or flat-out dominate.
Yeah.
And... That is why I have him so highly regarded. That is also why I have him over LeBron on these teams. Mm-hmm. I think that plays such a significant part. And besides, like, their scoring numbers, somewhat equal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Kawhi's averaging a career-high 27 points per game this year.
Right.
It's just... I think that second team spot is really going to come down to availability more than anything else. Like, if Kawhi sits out a bunch of games in the second half of the season just to prepare for the playoffs and LeBron plays every game from here on out, he's probably going to snake past Kawhi. Or if the Pelicans, God forbid, have to play Anthony Davis more and he stops half-assing it, then maybe they'll... I don't know, but... I think
Are you saying scoring 3 points in the game afterwards, throwing your teammates under the bus, isn't a great thing?
No, not a great look after you single-handedly destroyed the chemistry on your team by requesting a trade and involving them in... Alvin Gentry, I believe, called it a dumpster fire or a garbage fire last night, which is a perfect description of the Pelicans over the last couple weeks.
But at least the NBA found its new villain for 2019-2020.
That's true. That is definitely Anthony Davis.
Yep.
Okay, so let's go to third team then. I think, so if we're bumping Kawhi to second, that means LeBron and Anthony Davis are our third team forwards.
Right.
And then any argument with Gobert as the third team center?
No, I think he's there.
Yeah. Again, if like you force Davis in center, then it becomes more complicated. But I don't know why. Let's just make like just bump him to forward and make room for everyone. Because I don't know that there's not another forward who jumps to mind. Like Blake Griffin's the only other one who like jumps to mind as like he really is playing at an all NBA caliber. But
for a team that's 26-30.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, I wouldn't bump one of Brow or Gobert for Griffin, assuming, like, again, if Brow doesn't play the rest of the season, he probably misses out completely and Griffin probably replaces him. But as of now, yeah. I think it's Brow and Gobert, and you just fudge the positions a little to make that work. How about guards? Because I know you're going to hate be putting Russell Westbrook as third team all NBA.
No, well, look, I saw the list. I kind of get it because the alternative is Kemba Walker, who I think has had a better season, to be honest with you. But the win-loss column just factors in. Like, yeah. OKC is just so much better. I understand that a lot of that is driven by Paul George, but he can't do it single-handedly. So obviously Russ plays a vital part in all that. But if you're looking at it, if you remove the whole team success angle from it, I would have put Kemba in there, but you just can't. Not an all NBA.
Yeah.
You just can't. Like that's a crucial element. So I get it. I'm not crazy about it because I do think that Kemba's had such a fantastic season and he deserves recognition. But I really have nothing to add. I will say this. You know, it's really a shame that DeMar DeRozan didn't have a better year. I actually thought he would have a better year in San Antonio. I actually had him pegged as a candidate for this spot going into the season. But, you know, his offensive volume has just not been that great. The three-pointer, which we thought would be a weapon of his moving forward, just kind of regressed or he didn't take it a lot. And
He's only taken 41 this year.
Yeah.
He's shot 17% on them.
Yeah. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, I mean, he is more of a playmaker than ever. Like, he's averaging a career-high 6.1 assists per game. So I think he's, like, in consideration for it. But I agree. I don't think he bumps out Westbrook. Or I would put Kemba over him, too. The other guy I have in there is Bradley Beal, just because, you know, he's gone nuclear since John Wall got hurt.
Right. I mean, and that's where the conflict arrives, right? Because Bradley Beal is not playing on a great team.
Right.
But you also have to look at, you know, who are the remaining guards out there who are really doing well. Like, what kind of level are you willing to go down to? Like, Eric Bledsoe? Like, no. No way in hell.
Kyle Lowry.
No. Not Kyle Lowry either. Like, so there's a pretty significant gap, I feel.
Yeah.
From there on. And that's why I understand the inclusion of Westbrook.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, personally, I would have Kemba just for the experience and just for having him in there because he's played such a vital role for the Hornets, and I think they would have been an absolute, you know, bottom feeder if he hadn't been around.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't want to be that guy, but he is only shooting 43.1%, and Russ is shooting 41.7%, so his shooting percentage is not that much higher.
Wait, was that just the raw field goal percentage, though?
Yeah. I was going to get there. Yeah, Kemba's taking nearly twice as many threes as Russ.
All right.
So, yeah. All right. And he's hitting him at a much higher clip. So.
And has he not, like, had a mental breakdown from the free throw line?
He has not. He is 83% from the free throw line. Also averaging, I mean, it's wild. Like, this is his career high in turnovers this year. 2.5 still. Like, compare that to Russ, who's at 4.6, or Harden, who I can only assume is above 5 at this point.
Like, yeah, probably 5.5.
Yeah, it's wild for a lead ball handler to be averaging that low volume. Yeah, Harden is at 5.4. But yeah, so Kemba is averaging less than half of the turnovers per game that James Harden is. And he's playing on a team with much less talent.
Damn it, you convinced me. I'm having Kemba in over Russ now.
I'm still keeping Russ. You
convinced me. Like, you actually, I know that wasn't your intent, but the turnover argument that won me over.
Okay, good, great. Yeah, no, I'm still going. So my third team is Russ, Beal, LeBron, AD, and then Gobert. And then, Stubbs or Kemba, Blake Griffin, Nick Vucevic. It gets ugly quick. Like Simmons, Middleton.
I'm just thinking out loud. Like, if you have Vucevic as a snub, like, obviously Luka Doncic would be as well.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, like, to be fair, like, credit, we have crapped so much on the Magic over the years. It's only right that we give them credit when they are suddenly looking up. They won 7 of their past 8. They're only a game. They're a half game out of the Eastern Conference playoffs right now. A half game behind the Pistons and the Heat. Only a game behind the Hornets for 7. Like, things are looking up in Orlando. Jonathan Isaac's playing really well lately.
Yeah, he is. And you know why we haven't really paid attention to it? Because you and I specifically have this tendency of just ignoring Orlando because of past mistakes. Well, and because we kind of expect when they start hot, it's not sustainable.
Yeah, exactly. You're just waiting for the other shoe to drop. But, like, to their credit, it has not dropped yet.
It hasn't. I mean, it's been impressive. And, oh my God, that Terrence Ross dunk last night.
I was going to say, like, shout out to Terrence Ross for having a great season. Very good under the radar season.
Oh, I don't care about the season. I care about that dunk.
Well,
baseline. That too. Oh my God. Yeah. That was insane.
That was.
Like, did you see where he took off?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And then he finished on the other side of the basket. Right. And he double pumped it. And I mean, that was. We have this DM thread on Twitter. I think was it Keith Smith?
Yeah.
Friend of the podcast, Keith Smith, who dropped the link in there.
Yeah.
Like that was just, that was insane. That was one of the best dunks that I've seen in years.
Well, that is a perfect seg into our All-Star Weekend preview. Because honestly, I don't know if we're going to see a dunk during the slam dunk contest as good as the one we saw Terrence Ross pull off Thursday night against the Hornets. But
So give me the lineup. Give me the dunk lineup because honestly, I don't know. I have not put any type of research into who represents what in the All-Star Weekend. I don't care. So just who's in the dunk contest?
Man, you love All-Star Weekend. My favorite pod of the year is when we talk about All-Star Weekend. Okay. You'll be excited, though. You'll be excited about a couple of these guys.
All right.
John Collins from the Hawks.
Okay, I dig that one. Yeah,
Hamidou Diallo from the Thunder.
Wow, has he been on the radar much for dunks this season? I know that he's supremely athletic, but
I think there is one guy, and I don't remember if it was Collins or Diallo, because Derek Jones Jr. of the Heat was supposed to do it, and he had to pull out, and I don't remember who replaced him. Maybe it's even
okay.
Okay, well, we'll get so Miles Bridges of the Hornets is also doing
yeah. It. Oh yeah, that I like that one.
And then Dennis Smith Jr.
I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'll take it. Yeah, it's fine.
Like, I think that we'll see something cool. But, like, I'm still spoiled from that Zach LaVine, Aaron Gordon one a couple years ago. Like,
oh, you're so young. You're so young. Because know. You know what I'm still spoiled from?
Oh, like, yeah, Jordan?
No. Oh, okay, I'm not that old. Dude. No, I was in February of 2000, I was in China.
Okay.
And the NBA All-Star Weekend was shown in China.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, we were actually supposed to go on a trip, and then I didn't know that we could watch it on the hotel television, and they had a feed.
Uh-huh.
And then All-Star Saturday rolled around. I was like, nope, I'm not going. I don't care if I have to sit here and we have to leave, you know, the hotel first in like the evening or whatever. I need to watch this.
Uh-huh.
And that was Vince Carter.
Oh, yeah.
And look, seeing that live, and just because I wouldn't have had that opportunity here in Denmark. Like, nobody broadcast it at all.
Okay.
Like, and there was no YouTube, whatever. I would have to have waited like a year to get any type of information. Like, it would have been ridiculous. Seeing that live, man, that was just something. I'm still absolutely spoiled. And even with the Zach LaVine, Aaron Gordon showcase, which was great, I'm still stuck on Vince. And it's 19 years ago now. And he's still in the damn league, by the way. I mean, that was just the level of creativity. I think he was the one who actually built the foundation of guys thinking outside the box.
Yeah. I'm just proud of yourself for outing how old you are on this podcast.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, look, absolutely. There is a lot of dirt on this in this world that is younger than me.
All right. Well, so I know, you know, you and your son Bruce are actually going to stay up and enjoy the festivities. So what are you looking forward to the most during All-Star Weekend?
The dunk contest for his sake.
Yeah.
Because he loves it so very much. I always love the 3-point shootout.
Yep.
That's like the old school thing for me. It's so I'm so boring. It's like, it's the fundamentals, like just shooting. I love shooting.
And there's a lot of really good shooters in this year's cut. It's the Curry brothers, both Seth and Stephen, Buddy Hield, Damian Lillard, Chris Middleton, Kemba Walker, Danny Green, Devin Booker, Joe Harris, and Dirk Nowitzki, which is just going to be...
Who's shooting like what? Like 30%? 20?
Man. Very, very low. Yeah. He's just like... I love that he's just getting an honorary nod for everything this weekend.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, Dirk, we know you don't want like the Dwayne Wade farewell tour, but we know you're out after this year, so just come and like participate because we love you, and like you know, you haven't made it for a couple of years, like we want you to be here. But I love the jokes. I think it was Zach Lowe who was like, do you get to take an extra 15 seconds? Like, can you ask Adam Silver, be like, I'm old and I'm big. Like, it's hard for me to shoot really quickly.
I think it was Dirk himself
who
joked that he actually, he had apparently asked, like, as a joke, asked Adam about giving him another 15 seconds.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Because he said, like, the year he won it, he barely finished the racks because he's, like, a slow shooter.
Right. He's just a big dude. He's got long arms.
I want him to dunk in the All-Star game, if anything.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, because
that would be amazing.
You know LeBron's going to do, or, like, Wade and LeBron are going to combine for an alley-oop
something
at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah. It would be very funny if Dirk. Oh, but he's on the team with all the bigs, right? He's on Team Giannis. So I was going to say if, like, he tried to dunk and then, like, Embiid just swatted it away.
I would hate Embiid if he ruined that moment.
No,
but he
no.
would.
Yeah, Embiid would absolutely. Totally. He's such a troll.
But, by the way, now that we're talking about All-Star,
mm-hmm.
you know, with AD potentially.
Yeah.
You know, losing his arm.
Correct. Right.
We are in agreement that Luka Doncic should be the replacement player, right?
If we're not members of Jazz Twitter, yes.
Oh, Donnie? No,
Gobert. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, I keep forgetting that he got snubbed. Because to me, he's like such an obvious like inclusion in the game. So,
yeah.
Like, yeah. But, yeah, okay, I get that. I still want Doncic because of the entertainment angle.
Exactly.
I still want Doncic.
Yeah.
Doncic would be in there.
I think Gobert would get it because
he
was just such an obvious snub. But I agree. From like
a fun perspective,
it should be Luka and it shouldn't even be close.
No, but I do get it. Like we've talked at length about guys who have these great seasons deserving to come in and experience that format. And that obviously, like, Gobert deserves that because Luke is going to have, like, the next 12 or 15.
Right. He's going to be a fixture
have plenty.
In the All-Star game as soon as next season, especially if Porzingis is healthy next year. They'll be better. Right. the team's success, they can't be held against him. Like, he's proving that he's not, like, he hasn't hit the rookie wall, and I just don't think it's going to come for him. Like, I think
it's not. Like, yeah. He played an NBA season last year. People just don't know
right.
or care.
Right.
Well, outside of the 3-point shootout and the dunk contest, then we have like the skills challenge. Is that it for Saturday night?
I believe so. And Luka is in the skills challenge.
Yep, he is.
So that'll be fun, along with Trae Young, De'Aaron Fox, Mike Conley, Jokic, Tatum, Kuzma, and Vucevic.
What the hell is Tatum doing in that one, though?
I don't know. I guess they...
That was a random inclusion.
Yeah.
All right. Well, fair enough.
Yeah. I'm going to put my money on De'Aaron Fox in this one, I think.
Nah, this is Lucas.
I guess Luka's a better shooter, because you have to hit a three-pointer at the end, right?
Yeah, but, you know, De'Aaron Fox has grown pretty comfortable. Like, he's fine, but Luka's just, like...
De'Aaron's fast. Like, he would go through all the other drills. Like, Luka's too fast.
Yeah, he may be too fast. He may be too... Like, remember, like, you have to pace yourself.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know.
I think Luka's just built for that one. You know what I miss? And I'm going back to the early 2000s, Brian, because I'm old. I miss the two-ball competition.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's fair.
With the legend and the WNBA player.
Yeah. I don't know when the last
that wasn't two ball. That was something else, right?
Oh yeah, it was a legend, a WNBA player, and then an NBA player. I forget what the thing was actually called.
Yeah, I don't remember either. But like, I missed the inclusion
every year.
Yeah, right. But at least I love the inclusion of the WNBA players.
Yeah,
I always thought that was great. Like, it just paid so much homage to like that league, and I think it did a lot for the visibility of that league.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of weirded out by why the NBA hasn't done more. In that sense.
Yeah, it would be nice.
It would be. Yeah. Like, Elena Deladon would clean up in such an event.
Oh yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah. Was she on? I just remember Chris Bosh's team won, I feel like, 4 years in a row or something like that. Like, every time, it was always Team Bosh.
I think it was someone else. But, I mean, yeah, I remember Bosh just winning everything. And I remember people on Twitter going crazy.
Yeah.
Because, haven't they won enough?
Right.
Haven't the Miami Heat players won enough? Right. Like, it's the damn All-Star event. Like,
right.
Relax.
Right. Yeah. Wait, so who are you going to pick in the three-point contest?
You know, since the 10 minutes that's gone since you introduced me to the candidates?
Yeah.
Miles Bridges, I think.
Wait, that's the dunk contest.
Sorry, what did you say?
3-point.
Oh, 3-point contest. Yeah. Oh, okay, sorry. Steph.
Yeah. No, I'm going Joe Harris. Let's go for the wild card.
I could see it, but... Nah, man, I think Steph is just, he's, you know, I don't know. There's something about him these days. It's
he's
just
in
like,
Charlotte, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's another subplot.
Yeah.
But he's in his prime. Everything's just such a, like, have you seen his misses this year?
Yeah.
It's like, they're online all the time. Like, it's like, it's barely a miss.
Yeah,
like when it comes to it, they're almost halfway down. He's had in and outs. Like he's just so sharp at this point. I think it's him.
Yeah.
Even though it would be amazing if Seth won it, like just and could, you know, flip the bird to his big brother.
Yeah,
that would be hilarious.
Yeah. Right. If Dirk's not gonna win, Seth Curry would be the second most hilarious person to win, just because of the
bird. I want Dirk to win so bad, but I also want to be realistic.
Yeah. Oh no, it's not gonna happen.
I mean. Yeah. No, and then Miles Bridges, obviously, in the dunk contest. I think he's just... Because I think the dunk contest has gotten a little bit more... has been a little bit more about flair than power.
Yeah.
And I think Bridges is one of those guys who can bring the power back.
I'm taking Dennis Smith Jr. in the dunk contest.
I don't know. We'll see.
We'll see.
I'm not optimistic, but that's the one that my son is looking forward to the most. So I'll probably warm up by... You know, showing him a few old dunk contests.
Good.
And like, I just, it's the rookie, it's not called the rookie game anymore, is it?
The Rising Stars Challenge.
Rising Star Challenge. There we go.
Yeah.
Yep. As you can see, listeners, I am an expert on the NBA because I have...
Ben Simmons, still a second-year player, is playing for Team World.
Oh, come on. Come on.
I know. It's so goofy.
That's just rubbing it into, like, Donovan Mitchell's nose now.
I know.
Like,
it's so great. It makes me so happy. Because Donovan Mitchell's also in the game, but...
Of course.
Fellow second-year player, Donovan Mitchell. Well,
I'm so looking forward to, you know, this the end of this season when Ben Simmons wins Rookie of the Year.
I know, it's going to be great. And then turns out, I'm putting a piece up, it'll be up today at the Basketball Writers, about why I'm terrified of him possibly not taking an extension this summer and then signing a qualifying offer and leaving in 2021. It's keeping me up at night.
If that happens and he goes to a place that's like very clutch sportsy.
You mean the Lakers? The clutch sports Lakers?
No, well, you know, it may not be the Lakers, but like you may even see a different team where a lot of clutch sports clients ends up because LeBron may want to finagle it that way.
Right.
Like at one point, we are going to have this discussion about what the hell to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, if Simmons doesn't sign a 5-year max this summer, I'm going to have that discussion. We're just going to rename the podcast the Anti-Clutch Podcast. And I'm just going to start every episode with a 15-minute rant about how clutch sports is bad for the league. It's not only about Ben, but it's like, I do think, you know, because we've seen so many guys in recent years, Kyrie and Kawhi now and Jimmy Butler and Paul George, like they all forced their way out by saying, I'm not going to re-sign in a year. Anthony Davis is trying to do that now. The alternative, like all of those guys are in that situation because they signed big long-term deals coming off their rookie contract. The alternative, if you want control of your future and you don't want to force your team into a trade, is you take the qualifying offer and then you're an unrestricted free agent 5 years into your career. And as you'll see in that piece, for a number one pick in particular, because your qualifying offer is so high, you only lose, if you don't qualify for the Supermax, you're only losing about $12 million in terms of, you know, if you take the qualifying offer, then you do a 2+1, and then you sign a deal after your seventh year in the league so you can take the higher max. So it's like, it's risky, but I don't know. I'm wondering if like it's kind of the next frontier of players asserting their power over teams, which we've seen more and more in recent years.
I would agree with all that. We actually gone through this a couple of times before, and it's just, I think it all, you know, boils down to the Supermax just didn't work, and you've been riding this wave for a long time.
Yeah,
and like it just didn't work as intended, and you know the consequences are some of them we're seeing right now.
Mm-hmm.
And they just need to figure out a new system. Thankfully, though, I mean, let's get some perspective. Yeah, it's troublesome. They're still not at a place where you can get comfortable with the whole salary structure and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not the NFL. Like at the end of the day, this product is still absolutely amazing, and the issues that are within the league are somewhat minuscule.
Yes. For sure.
Which I really appreciate, in the grand context of things.
Yeah.
By the way, Brian, I don't know how we should react to this, but Adam Silver just presented a jersey I'm watching the video right now, that can change number and name, and I'm very not sure what this does.
So is this a jersey like you buy it and then you can like.
I don't know.
Or is it like you're at the game and you like virtual reality it to change?
I think it's maybe something along those lines. Okay. But I mean,
like I'm going to be pissed if there's a jersey that you could buy it and then change the player or number. Because where was this during the process era? I have always wanted a Henry Sims Sixers jersey or a Hollis Thompson Sixers jersey, and then I could have just changed to whatever other player they brought in on a 10-day contract. Sam Hinkie's going to come back in the league when this technology is introduced. It's perfect.
I may be butchering this name. Sam Esfandiari?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. He just posted the Ryan Reynolds gift, like, but why?
Every process person will know. Everyone who lived through that era will be like, oh, this is a great idea.
I mean, sure thing. You know what? It may be the NBA leaning into the whole idea of them liking all the player movement chatter.
Right, yeah.
Like, if we really love that,
you could change your Anthony Davis jersey to a Drew Holiday jersey. Boom.
Yeah, exactly. You know what the worst thing is? Like, I'm sitting here crabbing on it. I would probably buy it.
I would 100% buy it. Absolutely. I'm terrified to buy a Ben Simmons jersey because I think he's going to leave in 2 years.
So that's why. There we have the answer. That's why.
Yeah. I think that's a perfect place to wrap up. So, everyone, we hope you enjoy All-Star Weekend. Mort will actually watch it with his son, which is exciting in and of itself. So please follow us on Twitter on the NBA or at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes, so please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews. And we're now being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek. I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen. Mort, enjoy All-Star Weekend. I know you are so excited.
Yeah, I am. Thank you, Brian. And by the way, it might be the perfect opportunity just to say thank you for all the new listeners that's come in. You know, maybe you've stumbled upon this podcast over the past couple months, whatever. Thank you for listening in. And for those who've, you know, listened from the very start, thank you for your continued dedication. We appreciate it a lot.
Indeed, indeed. And we will have plenty more after All-Star Weekend, so stay tuned.
Oh, yeah. We're not done yet. Sorry, guys.